And welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I am your host, Tim Capper, along with Adam Markowitz. Howdy, howdy.
I'm back here, and if you got any dog voices in the background, I'm here with good old Teddy.
He's not one of those dogs that talk when we're not around, is he?
Or has I hope not. I mean, he's a smart dog.
Yeah? He's not like one of those
talking dogs.
He's not like one of those Scooby-Doo type of dogs, is he?
No, I don't think he's going to start calling me Shaggy or anything like that.
This week, Adam, I don't know where we can go with this. The games were really not that close. We had two games which were the exact same freaking score,
which is pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. I'm just very surprised at the teams that had the same score. You know, one of the games I really wasn't expecting. But what can you do? We were able to hear about some new playoff teams. We thought the Spokane Shock wasn't in. We had it verified. Well, for those who don't know, and we might as well get it out now, for those who didn't see it, let's get up our reasoning why we thought that Spokane should not have a clinch, but yet in the end we found out from the league that they did clinch.
Yeah, up until recently, ever since I remember in the AFL, the first tiebreaker after head-to-head record would be margin of victory in the games played against the foe, which, I mean, essentially that makes it the first tiebreaker.
Right.
Because obviously if you've only played one game, then if you outscored the foe, then you're good. I remember back, in 2000 when, Orlando played against Nashville, Predators ended up kicking a field goal on the last play of the game when they were up like 15 points, or I don't remember exactly what the situation was, but they were up a substantial margin and they kicked a long field goal on the last play of the game. That gave them the tiebreaker over Iowa, and that's why the Arena Bowl, or over Nashville, I'm sorry, and that's why the Arena Bowl that year was played in Orlando and not in the Alley. So that had always been the tiebreaker before, and sometime recently, apparently, the AFL changed it to conference record being the first tiebreaker, which in my opinion is really freaking dumb on account of the fact that not everybody plays the same number of conference games.
Not recently. No, that's true. That is true. And I don't know how far back it went. I know we were conversing, we were under the impression that the Spokane Shock was actually thinking the exact same thing that we were. But we got, you know, word from the league that it was, you know, conference, you know, record was the actual tiebreaker, and voila, as the league stated in their release, that, you know, we now have basically the wild card spots are completed in the National Conference. It's just basically down now to who's going to win the Central Division.
Yeah, and obviously who will be the three and who will be the four between Spokane and San Jose.
Mm-hmm. And we'll go over the...
As our Jeff Sims pointed out, that could make a really damn big difference if Chicago is the team that's winning the Central Division.
Yes. Yeah. It's going to be... You know what? It's, you know, even though these teams are only a game above 500, it should be very interesting. You know, and I think you mentioned it last week. You know, this is the team that, you know, San Antonio did, you know, total brain freeze. Quarterback, Rohan Davey for San Antonio. You know, they're 8-7. You know, Coffin in Chicago's been doing well, but man, last week they just absolutely obliterated. You know, Philadelphia goes on and we'll talk about Philadelphia some more, on a 51-6 streak to end the game.
Yeah, and obviously what San Jose did to San Antonio was damn near equally impressive.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty, you know, the games weren't as good as we expected them that they would be, but it's making a lot of, it's making it interesting down the end. You know, the league was promoting, you know, have more games, more teams are available, to make the playoffs, and it's more open. It's true. You know, nothing's really been decided in the American Conference. Same thing in the Central Division and the National. But this week, you have touted it, and I'm actually going to agree with you. It's probably one of the best interviews that we've had during the year. We were lucky enough to have Coach Pat O'Hara of the New Orleans Voodoo with us, and we'll be playing that for you a little bit later on. It was a fantastic interview, wasn't it, Adam? I mean, it's
absolutely.
Don't want to give too much away. Questions again, you guys have come through in spades. We got a lot of fan questions and the usual stuff. Adam, you were lucky to, you know, people that know that you were in Jacksonville 2 weeks ago, but something came up recently and you wanted to it's a community thing where I've noticed that, you know, a lot like the CFL, if the teams in the AFL really are into their community. And you noticed this one thing this past week when it came to the Shark Nation and their fans in Jacksonville.
Yeah, some of the biggest fans of the Sharks have Shark Nation, their fan club, have gotten together and have done a lot for their community, in Jacksonville, specifically at the Ronald McDonald House. And one of the events that they did recently was a cookout on the 4th of July at the Ronald McDonald House in Jacksonville. And I had the opportunity this week to speak with several members of the fan club who had helped out the initiative in Jacksonville. And as I stated in the article I wrote from it, we hear all the time about players and coaches and the organizations doing great things for their communities across all sports, not just the AFL. But in this instance, we actually have a fan base that's doing it. And I thought it was something that was incredibly notable and a story that absolutely needs to be told. And if you haven't read it yet, I mean, I toot my own horn sometimes, but I don't always feel like everything I write is totally newsworthy. But this is one of the better pieces of actual journalism that I've done. So I do suggest that you read it because it really is a great story. About a bunch of fans who are doing their share to help out a community who, and let's face it, every community has people who need in some respect or others. In this case, we're talking about specifically with Ronald McDonald House children who are very ill and in a lot of cases are just not going to get better.
Exactly. And, you know, we usually see this type of thing, community work, more or less with the teams and more or less with the cheerleading squads. You know, we see that all the time where they're, you know, I see a lot of the stuff that the teams are doing. We see it on Twitter and whatnot. You don't hear that much when it comes to the fans, but, you know, I read the story itself and, I'm curious to know if other fan groups do this. I think about Goal Line Bandits as an example over in Spokane. Let's see, the Storm, was it the Storm Surge in Tampa? I'm trying to remember I think it's the name of the
group. They're not really much anymore. You know, the Predator Fan Club and all these, there's, every team has their sort of organization.
Yes. So it's a great read and, as Adam put in there, if you do have the means to go ahead and, contribute, there is a link in the article itself. Any feedback on it, let us know. We would be greatly appreciated to hear about it. Adam too, obviously. Where else can we go here? You know what? We're talking about things that occur, and I noticed this last week, and I think, you know, you really don't see that much trash talking per se when it comes to social media, especially through Twitter, and maybe something that I don't follow a lot of the players or have all the players on our Twitter feed for Arena Fan. But this past week, Coach Guy in Arizona put out, it was just actually two tweets, if I'm not mistaken. I've never seen a coach openly, do I dare use the word? It's not the right word to use, is it here, Adam? It's bash.
He had a lot to say. Let's put it that way. He had a lot to say to me in an interview, and he had a lot to say on Twitter before and after the game against the Predators. And the tweet that we're talking about specifically, I don't have it up. Do you have it up, Tim?
No, I don't.
Okay, but essentially it said that it was the first time he had coached in a game that both sets of fans left happy. Arizona's fans obviously leaving happy because of you know, the Rattlers winning the game. And Orlando fans leaving happier due to the fact that their season ticket holders are going to get more money back next year. So, now, obviously there is a long history between the Rattlers and now Predator owner Brett Bushy. Mm-hmm. Bushy used to own the team in Arizona. Was not a liked character in Arizona, and I think that puts it very mildly. That's probably the mild way of putting it. So there is a history there, and there are a lot of people, especially out there, that really would like to see Orlando fail from that standpoint. And, you know, hat tip to Kevin Guy for coming up with the funniest line that I've read about this for the time being. But, you know, he was also PO'd about the dump of a hotel that, that the team is staying in. And, yes, I'm calling it what it is because I only live about 10 minutes up the road from this hotel.
Yeah.
The poor hotel they stick these players at, if this really is where everyone is staying, man. I mean, I know you're supposed to be staying at a three-star hotel, and this probably by definition is a three-star hotel, but it's only because the place is right next to Disney, not because it's actually got a three-star caliber.
Yeah, exactly.
Of a hotel.
The two tweets, I just came across them. It was done. The second tweet that Coach Guy did, hilarious. Turn the jungle into a rainforest after watching Pred owners cry over writing check to cover season tickets. Go Rattlers. Epic. That was,
you know what, when you're a guy who has won, you know, who's won the Arena Bowl and brought your team in the Arena Bowl another time.
Yeah.
Man, I guess you can do that. When you got the best team in the league, I guess you can trash talk.
Exactly. And if you're wanting to follow him, you can do so on Twitter at Coach K Guy. He actually got 5 retweets and 3 favorites on that one alone. That was.
You know who one of them was on each account?
Yep. Yep, exactly.
So, at AFL Guru may or may not have done that.
Yeah, and I know I did that one at least on my personal account. That was, I thought it was, I don't remember, do you remember, Adam? I mean, in the history of Twitter when it comes for players in the AFL, I've never seen trash talk you gotta admit, this is probably one of the, you know, this is something the league is not gonna put in their tweet of the week, in their, you know, they have their own newsletter that they send out every Friday. This is one thing that's not going to be in there as their tweet of the week at all.
You don't think anything off of Kevin Guy's Twitter is going to be the tweet of the week, huh?
Nah, not in this kind of situation. I mean, I've seen some of the players. It's usually players and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't think
so. The only thing I relate this to is when Markham came out in the Orlando media, and he always used to do this, razzing Orlando fans, but specifically the one I'm thinking about is when he said Orlando fans are what happens when cousins marry and have kids.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of, great segue. We saw a picture from Chris Arnold in Tampa Bay this past week. Coach Markham was in the crowd.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I saw the picture of him. It was actually great to see Coach Markham in the crowd. That was fantastic. I know we haven't heard much about Coach Markham in quite a few weeks, and I was actually quite happy to see him. It's good to see him there. He looks pretty good. We're getting closer to the playoffs. We've had two teams already announced playoff dates. We have Philadelphia and Jacksonville. Both those games are going to be played on August 3rd. So it stands to believe that one of those games will be on, CBS Sports Network.
You never know.
We'll see what the other.
Oh, they're probably going to be the same day.
Yeah. But we'll see what games are. But obviously we're now coming up with all these Arena Bowl announcements and, you know, the league's been putting out their top 10 Orlando lists for whatnot for our hashtag, by the way. / Destination Orlando. But the league went ahead and announced, you know, you think this year, Adam, that we already have a sponsor in Net10 Wireless. Do you think we were going to get another sponsorship? Yeah, well, I'm not surprised because the last couple of years they've had a presenting sponsor. They actually have the actual sponsor of the Arena Bowl, but we actually have a presenting partner this year.
I wonder if they're going to change the logo.
You know how busy that would look?
Yeah, I don't know. They snuck a Vitae in there. They snuck Napa in there.
Mm-hmm. That's true. They actually had to remember. Well, thank God for one of them. They had to do a complete redesign when there was when
that was the Spokane one. Right?
Yeah, that was for Napa, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But the AFL announced the other day the Insurance Office of America as the presenting partner of Arena Bowl 26. With all honesty, Adam, I never heard, you know, I've heard of Nationwide, I've heard of, I'm trying to think of some of the other insurance companies.
Yeah, I mean,
I never had heard of them.
It's a local thing here, and they're simply known as IOA, and, you know.
They're the 8th largest privately held insurance agency in the United States, with its headquarters in Longwood, Florida, the suburb of Orlando, as you said, it's a local thing. 30 offices coast to coast. And, you know, Commissioner Kurz went ahead and said that, you know, getting a signature brand like IOA associated with the Arena Bowl is an outstanding opportunity. obviously nothing is mentioned about if it's a barter type of thing or if it is a payment type of thing for the advertising. I don't know, but like it was with most of the other presenting sponsors or actual partners, it's going to feature on-air elements, you know, during the broadcast. And Adam, it looks like now we have a brand new award for the game itself. It's going to be called the IOA Difference Maker of the Game.
Great.
So.
What, do you get a free insurance policy if you win that award?
It's a very good question.
Yeah, is anyone used to get a car for being the MVP of the game?
Yeah, Mitsubishi. I remember that.
Remember when we used to be able to afford cars to give to people?
It was Mitsubishi, Ford. Who else? Was that it?
I know Mark Grebe got one in 08.
Yeah.
I know 07. I don't remember who got it in 08.
That might have been Mitsubishi. It was Mitsubishi and Ford. I don't think we've never had Honda. I don't remember.
But I remember showing up at Media Day, one of those, I think it was either 07 or 08, and on the field you've got the Foster Trophy in all its glory, mm-hmm. all bent up and with all the fingerprints on it, and there's the car, and everybody seemed to be more interested in the car than they were interested in the trophy.
And by the way, it's funny, you look at this, the last quote here they're talking about, he goes, there's not a better way to debut the AFL-IOA partnership. When I read it real quickly, it's like, AFL-CIO? What?
May as well be.
So it's, yeah, I'm sure we're going to hear about some other sponsorships. They usually come out of the woodworks, you know, leading up to Arena Bowl. But I think in past recent years, this is probably the earliest that a presenting partner, sounds similar to what they do with the Rose Bowl, if I'm not mistaken, right? Something similar to the Rose Bowl.
Presented by Vizio.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I'm sure we'll hear more stuff coming out of the woodwork. Let's see. What else can we talk about here? Let's see. Yeah, when it comes to the league, you know, oh, here's one thing that just came across. You know, Philadelphia, you know, they're not exactly the same team as they were last year. In any way, shape, or form, you know, record-wise, whatnot, you know, scoring-wise. But they are actually coming up on some pretty interesting milestones. We're not necessarily talking about team-related, but also player-related also, aren't they?
Yeah, the Soul, actually, and I just kind of randomly came across this, if assuming that our numbers are correct, are just over 14,000 fans away from getting to 1 million all-time. So conceivably, it could happen this week, and if it doesn't happen this week, it will certainly happen on August 3rd when the Soul have their first playoff game against presumably either the Tampa Bay Storm, Orlando Predators, or New Orleans Voodoo.
Right.
We'll get to 1 million fans.
That's
and that will make them the, I believe, fifth active franchise to reach that 1 million mark.
Do we, off the top of your head, do we know which is the, obviously I think it's one of the teams.
Tampa Bay has 2.5 million.
There we go, 2.5. And
so that's the one.
It kind of helps when you are playing those games over in the Thunderdome, I would imagine, being able to draw 20 to 25,000 constantly.
By the way, if you add up all of the incarnations of the Barnstormers, they've been 1 million fans too, but.
That, okay.
Take that for what it's, you know, cut off Iowa where you choose to cut off Iowa. And obviously the other teams who have reached 1 million are, Arizona, Orlando, Tampa Bay, and San Jose.
Yeah. And we haven't talked about it that much this year. Speaking of attendance, we'll get back to the Philadelphia thing in a second. You know, they drew 9,200 this week. It's the second time this year they've actually drawn over 9,000. I don't think they did that. I think they only did it twice last year also, if I'm not mistaken. And remember that last year was the second lowest attendance ever in league history. Double checking it real quickly. Did it?
Yeah, 7,841 was the league average last year. We're up about 140 fans this season, but you know, take it all kind of for what it's worth.
Yeah, it was first week and last week that they hit the 9,000 mark in the as far as attendance average goes. I remember I set a very lofty goal of hitting 9,000 earlier this season. They're close to 8. They're at 79-81 average.
And probably will get, well, Orlando's still got two more home games. Tampa Bay still only has one more home game, so maybe not. Look at it this way. They're done with games in Rockford.
Yeah. No, this week.
Oh, I'm sorry. This week's game.
This week's the last game.
In Rockford. So.
So that will probably bring it down, but.
Utah's last game is probably going to bring it down too.
Well, considering they drew it quite well. I mean, they drew 71-71 last week, which, again, that was one of the, the voodoo in town for the zombie night, or whatever it was. I still think that's
Yeah, that's one of the bits of bitter irony.
It's irony, very, very much so. And, of course, as we know, Voodoo came in, and they won their second straight game, a road game in a row, and made everything all the more interesting in the playoff race. And as I said, we'll get to that a little bit later. So, we're talking about Philadelphia. Besides hitting that, don't they have a couple of impossible player milestones coming up in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, the Soul are very interesting right now. They've rolled off 5 straight wins. They've outscored teams by 22 points per game in that stretch. And when you look at last year's team, they outscored teams by 17.2 points per game. And obviously, they were doing a lot more offensively last year. But the defense is playing a lot better this season in this stretch. And obviously, we will see as the rest of this year goes on and into the playoffs whether this is a matter of the Soul are that good or the Soul have just been playing nobody. But interestingly enough, we've spoken about Derrick Ross ad nauseum when he got to his 100th career rushing touchdown.
Right.
But what people don't realize is how good the rest of the skill players are on this team. Dan Rodabaugh, and we're going to talk more about him when we get to our questions a little bit later today. But in his last 4 and change games, has completed 76% of his passes and has a 26-to-zip TD to INT ratio. And those are the types of numbers that make you not just win games, but win, win division titles, win playoff games, and ultimately win championships.
It's very similar to what
Eric Meyer did.
Yeah, Eric Meyer did at the beginning of the year, yeah.
And Rodabaugh is actually the highest rated quarterback in the AFL now, just over 127. So it's interesting to see how he has evolved this year, and part of the reason that he has been so good is because Tiger Jones is putting up the type of year that receivers only dream of. He is just a handful of yards away from becoming the first receiver in AFL history to have 3 2,000-yard seasons. Now, granted, he's had some help from the standpoint of having the 18 games, but just the fact that he's the only man to have done it in each of the last 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
He's had 12 games this year with at least 8 catches, 12 games with at least 100 yards. He scored a touchdown in some capacity in 17 straight games dating back to last season. And most impressively is he's only 432 yards away from breaking Rob Windsor's single season record for the most receiving yards in a year in AFL history.
And
that's
one record that you mentioned to me before we started taping that you never thought was going to be broken.
Yeah, it was going to take a lot to break that record. Of course, the fact that Windsor did it in a 16-game season does give him a little more credence to that. And look, it's no guarantee that Tiger Jones is going to get 432 yards in these last 3 games. But I could see Coach Dolezal being aware of that and kind of sort of edging him towards the record.
Yeah,
surely.
Yeah, and obviously, this year, same thing. Adrian McPherson was possibly going to break the all-time, most touchdowns scored in a single season, but, obviously he's been, sidelined with his, lower body injury, and
hockey injury, right?
Exactly. I'm talking about the NHL. But yeah, it always seems, and people need to understand too, sure. We had some other records broken this week, and I'll give another example. I know we're going to talk about Orlando specific, but I'll just throw this one out. This past week, with the constant benching that was being done by the Utah Blaze, perennial AFL veteran, all-star player, whatever accolade you want to give him, Aaron Garcia became the all-time leading quarterback for most interceptions in a single season. Now,
and he's impressively done it in 14 games.
True, exactly. But one of the things that we're trying to look at too, and it's one of the things is now available when you do the player records is players most interceptions per game. I think that's been set up recently for interceptions. So, but still, it's he now is 26. It's not something.
And counting.
Yeah, exactly. That's something, and we joked about it last week, saying that he may break it, and he just happened to. this is something we know the league is not going to promote because it is a negative record, but it's a record nonetheless. You know, it's, you need to break these things down over a game. And I think you did it a few years ago, if I remember correctly. You did something where you actually broke it down because based on, is it 14 games, 16 games, we went back to what it was back in the old days. You know, it makes me wonder, Adam, that if, let's say for whatever reason, the league decides if they do lose some teams, and let's say they end up being like 10, 12 teams next year, or anytime in the near future, and they decide to reduce the games, how these, you know, could it be possible
that these records would never be broken?
Will never be broken. At all. You know, it goes back to like what Tommy Grady did last year, and I think that was one that we centered on in particular, his touchdowns that he threw. He legitimately, if I remember correctly, he legitimately broke the touchdown record within 14 games. Was it 14 games that he broke it in? I'm trying to remember what it was.
It was ridiculous.
So freaking many. I think that's one of the things that you came up with that he actually.
Yeah, Grady averaged 7.9 touchdowns per game that year, and that is a mark that I do not think will ever be broken. You know, forget about the 140, whatever it was. The 7.9 will never be touched.
Yeah, exactly.
At least, well, let me rephrase that. For a quarterback that is going to play in at least, say, 10 games.
True.
Some
yeah.
reasonable number of games.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's a record nonetheless, but, for Tiger Jones to be able to break this record, I mean, he's been close in years past.
Again, just the fact that he's going to put up, you know, 6,500 to 7,000 yards over the course of three seasons is really freaking remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm just double checking.
I mean, he's already 13th all time in league history with 9,200 receiving yards.
He's already 13th.
He's only been in the league since 08.
Wow. That's crazy.
He's also, I haven't looked this up, but I am venturing to say he's the only man who's had at least 1,800 yards in four straight seasons. He's probably going to become the only man to have at least 40 touchdowns in four straight seasons.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, that's nuts. Interceptions thrown, by the way. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. Mickey Guidry holds the record. He threw 2.0, literally two interceptions a game back in 1992. And that's, for 1992, considering how few games they played back then, Adam, that's pretty huge.
Yeah, they played 10 games and he threw 20 picks.
Now, Garcia, by the way, if we were to put him into perspective, he is now ninth at 1.4.
Still plenty of time to catch up.
And Grady is tied with him at 1.4. So, mind you, remember Grady has played less games this year too, so. Other records too. When we talk about it, you know, when teams can be completely, completely inept. That was the Montreal Alouettes offense this past week. But I can also get the two when it comes to Arena Football League teams. Hey, weekly CFL reference. Orlando, you were hinting at a record when you and I were talking in the chat room, and we had to do some digging. And thanks to our database guru David Carlson. We were able to come up with a pretty, pretty interesting record. And we were able to actually be able to go back, you know, as far as we could with this record, couldn't we?
Yeah. There have been 71 games in AFL history where a team has scored 80 points, or at least in the context of this, has allowed 80 points in a game. And the Predators did it this year for the third time when they gave up, I believe it was 84 last week.
To Arizona,
against Arizona, I don't have it in front of me.
I think it was 84.
But yeah, 84 points against Arizona was the third time this season that the club had allowed at least that 80-point mark, and it got me thinking. I deemed it a record at the time without actually looking it up because my gut told me I was right, and now we've done the back work behind it, and we are absolutely right that this is the only time in Arena Football League history that a team has given up 80 or more points three times in the same season.
So
there are several that have done it twice,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, there are several that have done it twice, but none had done it three times before, and there are still games for Orlando to screw the pooch again.
No, it seems like last year, you know, with the bad year that they had, they set basically a league record for the most times a blow game to 20 leads of 20-plus points. It did it five times, if I remember correctly, last year. I think we've only had two teams blow that this year. But if we were to break them down real quickly, Adam, the teams that have done it, I think we had a list of the teams that have done it twice in a year before Orlando broke the record last week.
I deleted it, but Utah was on it a couple times. Sorry, I took what you needed from it and I deleted it. Utah was on that list a couple times. I know last year Tampa Bay did it, and both games were against Philadelphia, ironically. That's the only time that's happened in league history, that a team has given up 80 to the same team twice in a season. It also happened to Spokane last season. So it has happened before. It's not unprecedented to do it twice, but to do it a third time, and again, we're going to look back at this and say, oh, it happened in an 18-game season. Actually, for Orlando, it happened three times. Oh, I take it back. Orlando has now given up 80 twice to Arizona. So I guess Tampa Bay was the first team to give up 80 points twice to the same team. But anyway, Orlando has now given up 80 points in its last, let's see, its last 11 games.
Nice.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes. Quite a bit.
And they won one of those games.
That always seems to be the case, though, too. I think we had a couple years back, I think it was Arizona played two games in a row where they scored 80-plus points, or both games went in overtime and ended up winning by scoring 80-plus points. One was in overtime, one was in, I think it was 82-80, that was the game in overtime, and the other one ended up being 80-70-something, you know, a two-point convert at the end of the game that won the game for them. But and it's true, 80 has not been a number that's shown up at very many times this year in the 2013 season, has it?
No, it's only a number that showed up, I believe it's seven times. Again, I wrote it down before and deleted it because I didn't need it anymore. Putting it sort of in context in Predator history, is even more interesting because this was always a team back through the 90s and the early 2000s that really prided itself on its defense. It prided itself, you know, when there was a two-way game, of having defensive linemen who rushed the passer and got sacks and did everything that needed to be done. And obviously Kenny McIntyre and Damon Mason and all these defensive backs who were going to, you know, go down in league history as amongst the best at their trade ever. And now the team with, by the way, one of the best defensive-minded coaches in the history of the league and Doug Plank coaching them, can't stop anybody.
Yeah.
You know, we've already mentioned the three times they've allowed 80-plus points. The team's also allowed 60 points or more eight times, and that sets a franchise record from most dubiously last year. You know, the Predators had only allowed 80 points in a game once before this season. So it has gotten very ugly. And when you go and break down the stats even more, you could see why. The team only has 10 interceptions for the entire season, dead last in the league by a country mile. The team is only intercepting a pass every 51 pass attempts by opposing quarterbacks, and that's just a phenomenally huge number. The next lowest are the Pittsburgh Gladiators, who are averaging an INT every 39 pass attempts. So think about that, 11 more pass attempts. That's practically a half a football.
Well, let me ask you this question. Do you think that one stat is a lot – is where it is? Is because of possibly missing Kenny Mack in the backfield?
Not anymore. I mean, Kenny Mack was a part of the problem last year. Mm. You know, they've gone through just rotations of defensive backs, and save for Dominic Jones, it doesn't seem like anybody else is in there on any given basis, and it's because they just can't find anybody.
Yeah.
You know, we saw this week, we actually broke it before the transactions came out, that the team has picked up Tanner Varner, and that may help. This is a guy who's been all arena in the past, but he hasn't played all year. So it'll be interesting to see what he can bring to the table. But the Predators have allowed 6.8 yards per play this year. That's tied for worst in the league, and they allowed 10.8 yards per play last week to Arizona. So it's ugly, and it's really there's no two ways around this. This is the worst defense that the Orlando Predators have ever put on the field, and it's not even close. This may go down as one of the worst defenses in AFL history.
Wow. Even we're talking about the days of the 0-for teams, Cleveland Thunderbolts,
Yeah, the Carolina Cobras and all that. But it was a different game then. True. You know, it was that's a much true. Different game. Teams kicked field goals on fourth down. Back then.
What? The Arena Football League. What's a field goal?
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. Had about six or seven of those made this year, right?
Yeah, something that's like that. Yeah. I don't, yeah. Okay. Well, we were very honored to be able to have Coach Pat O'Hara join us this week on our weekly interview. It is a gentleman that, as you know, he started off as a player, became head coach. He's actually been named, for those who don't remember, he was actually named a head coach for a team multiple times that never ended, and he never ended up coaching. And he'll actually be able to explain why a little bit in the interview itself. But that's it. We're going to go ahead and play the interview with Coach O'Hara. And when we get back, we got the questions from you fans. We got the what's coming up as far as the games this week and a little bit more. So we'll be right back. Well, it's always great to be able to talk with somebody who is currently involved in the Arena Football League, and we are very lucky to have one of those people with us tonight. On the phone with us is a three-time Arena Bowl champion who played for 11 years in the Arena Football League, from Orlando to Toronto to Tampa Bay. Has anybody guessed who we're talking about yet? If not, currently a coaching career, 2 years in Orlando, and currently with the New Orleans Voodoo, we have Coach Pat O'Hara. Thanks for joining us, Coach.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Coach, the Voodoo this year are now in position to make it to the playoffs, but it hasn't always been the easiest year in the world, and I guess it started for you personally in the offseason with some surgery you had. I know it was a tough time for you. You can tell the fans exactly what we're talking about.
Well, towards, you know, really the last two or three years, my knee had just really been bothering me. I really needed my meniscus, cleaned out and fixed in my right knee. It's a knee that I've had issues with since college, and it was just bothering me. So during last season, I just had got with our team doctors and we're just going to have a routine, kind of a scope procedure on it. And about 2 days after the season last year, just had the 20-minute procedure, and a couple of days later, I had a full-blown staph infection. It was horrible. And had two more procedures on it after that. One of them was on the day of the Arena Bowl, and it turned into a real kind of scary thing there with the staph infection. I learned a lot about it, and it's no fun. So that was tough.
Well, Coach, when it comes to the knee problems itself, I mean, how long did the process take to finally, you know, get back to full health? And you know, how is the knee currently?
It was scary. I mean, it was scary. I had no idea what I was getting into. I thought, you know, after I'd gotten diagnosed with the staph infection, they said, well, we're going to clean it out, you know, and that sounded real good to me at the time. Let's clean it out. It was extremely painful and hot and infected. And, but then I got in the hospital and underwent the surgery and then another surgery a day later. And, when the Center for Disease Control comes into your hospital room, and starts talking to you about the dangers of staph infection, and it's scary. And I was so sick, guys. I got so sick, and I was on a 24-hour, you know, IV connected to my body that I carried around for 8 weeks, and then on oral antibiotics for 4 weeks after that. So it was tough on the body, tough rehab. You know, I need a knee replacement. That's something I'm going to have to do in the future. I'm able to get around now, you know, but I definitely need the replacement surgery, but, you know, day to day, it's just something I deal with, and, I can tolerate it now.
So Coach, you get to the season, you open up with a big win in overtime, and the win looks a lot bigger now, a lot more important now, against the Orlando Predators, but then you go on and lose 8 straight games, to drop to 1-8. What was that start of the season like to you, and how did you get this team rallied around again to be in a position to get in the playoffs?
Well, I'd tell you what, it was one of the more difficult things I've ever been through as a player or coach. And, you know, I kind of joked around with people that, I don't think I've lost 8 in a row at anything except maybe blackjack. And, when you do that in football, it's tough. You know, I thought, you know, in camp, you know, Donovan Morgan ended up having a knee surgery during camp and lost Donovan there. And Kirk just didn't have quite the timing down with some of the other younger guys. We had a few injuries. We won that first game. We didn't play well, but we were fortunate to win that game in overtime. And then we got beat by an Iowa team that played really sound. And then we got really exposed against Jacksonville as far as protection goes. And we all started looking at each other like, what's going on? And then we had a bye week, and then we played Pittsburgh, and we're up 20 points, and then we lose Kurt and Donovan in that game, and we lose to a Pittsburgh team that, you know, we were beating pretty soundly, and then it got ugly there for a while, you know. And I think, you know, you really look in the mirror, what can we do to turn this thing around? And I think, you know, number one is, you know, we kept a routine and a resolve and stuck to the plan. I think, for one, that's important. Number two, you know, we got healthy. And then number three, made a couple personnel changes that really helped us. And, you know, we're starting to play better football, you know, after the 1-8 start, you know, that's mid-season of 9 games. And we kind of had a mock funeral, you know, we kind of said, look, the first half of the season is dead and buried, and we're moving on to season 2. And the way things were going in our conference, we had an opportunity to potentially make a push for the playoffs. So that was the approach, and that was 6 weeks ago. And since then, we've won 4 out of our last 6, playing a little better football. You know, we could have been 6-0 too, and lost tough games to San Antonio and Philadelphia. And so we're playing better football. We're facing some more injuries now, but, our guys believe they're playing hard. Whoever plays, you know, really well in July typically has a chance to do things in the postseason. So, we're just down that stretch right now with these final 3 weeks.
I think it's pretty funny, Coach, that you're talking about how you bring up a funeral. I mean, you're in the Crescent City. You're home of, basically, we could say black magic or whatever you want to call it. Did you do anything in particular? Did you happen to, I don't know, happen to see a medicine woman? Or, you know, I joke when I say it, but what did you do? Anything in particular to try to break this curse or to put this curse to bed, as you basically were saying?
I tell you what I thought about everything. You know, it's funny. You know, you mentioned those things, those particular things, being in the city of voodoo, you know, and we didn't do any of that. I think, and you have to credit the players, we maintained a resolve of what the possibilities were and what we had to do, try to be very honest with each other about when we broke down our film, when we corrected our mistakes. And, you know, I've been through some similar experiences, not quite this bad, as a player. And I tried to look back on those situations as a player and, translate that to our team. And they came out to work every day though, guys. I mean, they, you know, you lose that many in a row, you worry about the mentality of your team and the psyche, and they came out to work every day. You know, you have to credit them for doing that. Our coaches, we maintained the resolve. We fought through it. And again, we got healthier. Made a couple personnel changes, and, you know, we started playing a little bit better football.
At any point, Coach, with all that, the losing that you had, did you ever fear for your job as a head coach?
You know, well, in Orlando, you know, we won 11 games and I lost my job.
That's true.
I could tell you here, you know, that's always something when you're in this business. You know, there's you know, like the cliche, there's a couple kinds of coaches. There's only two kinds. One that are hired and one that haven't, you know, going to get moving on. The one thing that, you know, I'm proud of is Daniel, that really stuck by me through that. That he really believed in me. We talked daily about what we were trying to do and accomplish. And, Dan's, loyalty to me was tremendous. And, you know, that was huge for me. So, it's a character builder. You know, you're always, when you lose that many games, you can easily, see changes coming. Dan decided to stick with me, and I appreciate it.
Coach, obviously this season's been kind of an odd one. You've had two different homes. Of course, the New Orleans Arena is under its renovation. You've moved into the, shall we say, cavernous, Superdome right across the street. Has there been any sort of different approach to playing in the Superdome from playing in New Orleans Arena?
Not really, you know, not really. I think, you would think it is because the Superdome's so massive, but, you know, as a football player, arena football player, as an arena football coach, once you get in between the walls, it really doesn't matter where you are, you know? So, it really didn't, that wasn't in effect. As a matter of fact, we got to practice in the Superdome quite a bit, which really helped us in the latter part of the season. So that wasn't too big of a change. I think from a crowd and intimacy standpoint, being in the arena, sometimes they can get a little bit louder in there and the intimacy of that place. But, you know, Adam, you know, back in the day playing in the Thunderdome, which is Tropicana Field, you know, that was always a neat setup, a neat venue to play the Tampa Bay Storm. And so for me, you know, it seemed fairly normal.
Boy, that was the way back machine there from the old, when the Storm were on the other side of the bay. Coach, you played four of your first five games at home, and obviously you started 1-4, which wasn't the start to the seat, you know, that you would have wanted. Was there a concern knowing that you had to play so many road games, this coming week being your second straight, your second three game, the end of your second three game road trip, rather?
You know, I've always been one as a coach that, you know, people discuss their schedule and the pros and cons about it. And some people get upset about their schedule. I've just always been one guy where, give me the schedule and we're going to go play it. You know, you're going to get 9 home games and 9 away. And everyone's got some challenges with their schedule. So, you know, we saw it. We knew July we have to go on the road. You know, the last 2 weeks have been good for us. Obviously, we have a tremendous challenge this week going on the road for a third week in a row. But, you know, you got to play them all. You got to play 9 on the road, 9 at home. So I've never, you know, kind of shared that with our team. That's an issue. It's always, hey, who's on the schedule? They're next up. That's who we're going to play.
Coach, you've obviously had your share of quarterbacks this year. You've been through, you started with Kurt Rocco, and he's been dealing with injuries, and then through Bill Stahl and Zach Eskridge, and now to Chris Dixon. Dixon seems to, I mean, on paper anyway, has the best numbers of the bunch. What has he brought to your team as a midseason acquisition?
Well, Chris, you know, provides a totally new element. You know, a lot of arena fans that have been around a long time, you know, have seen quarterback and shotgun a whole lot, you know. Chris is very comfortable doing it. Certainly new for me, in all my, you know, 18 or 19 years in this league. I've never had been a part of a shotgun type situation, but he's a unique guy. He's able to handle it. We've built, you know, an offense around him where to enable him to be able to use his skill set properly. He's a guy that's been able to win a lot of games in the IFL and not only win games, but win championships and win MVPs of United Bowls in the IFL. And, he really accomplished everything he needed to accomplish there. And, you know, people say he's not tall enough or, you know, not, strong enough arm or can't run fast enough, but, you know, the guy's a winner. Has some intangible traits about him, and we're hoping that, you know, he can continue to help us. He certainly played well last week.
Well, obviously, Coach, you got a huge game this week. You're heading to, the defending Arena Bowl champion, the Arizona Rattlers. You have a lot of challenges ahead of you. I mean, it's, how are you and your team, trying to approach this game heading into the snake pit?
Well, I think that, you know, certainly Arizona's, you know, the best team in the league. You know, they're well coached, they're experienced. They've all played together and coached together for a lot of years, and, they're the defending champions, and, they're excellent. So, I'm excited to see our team in what they're going to do this week. I really am. You know, I'm excited to see our quarterback play. You know, I'm excited to see what our guys can do. Our guys believe, you know, they believe over the last, you know, 6 weeks, they've been a different and had a different mentality, and it's been fun to be around. And, they don't believe that they're what their record says they are. You know, they have the naivete that they're not, which is good. So I'm actually really excited about it. Tremendous challenge, long trip. We just seems like we just got off the plane from Utah and we're getting ready to turn around and go back, but I'm just excited for it, you know, and, it's fun being around these guys, cause they care and they're fighting every day and working hard. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Coach, obviously these last three games of the season, mean everything to you. Your destiny is in your own hands. What are the Voodoo going to have to do just to get into the playoffs this year?
Well, we've got Arizona, Jacksonville, Orlando. That's no easy task. But, you know, there aren't any easy games in our league. You know, there really aren't. They're all tough. It's really tough to win in this league. But I think, number one, we got to stay healthy. You know, I think we've played 12 straight weeks without a bye. There's a lot of teams that have played, you know, without a bye for a lot of weeks also. And the teams, in my experience and the championships that I've been a part of, you know, played their best ball and stayed healthy in July. It didn't move into the postseason. So I think certainly health is huge. I think a quarterback's got to play well. You know, we've got to get a few breaks. I mean, every championship team that I was on in this league, we got a couple breaks, you know, to get there, and the ball bounced our way because you can't control the way that ball bounces off that, those bars. So injuries, quarterback play, and a little bit of luck, and anything can happen.
Now, when it comes to this week and the Rattlers, are you able to tell us, Coach, is Dixon going to be your man under center?
Well, you know, we're day-to-day with Kurt and shoulder, and certainly Chris played well last week, played at a pretty high level. So, you know, we're going to see. I think, you know, obviously it's kind of leaning towards Chris. I don't think that's any secret. But Kurt's battling every day to come back from the shoulder, so we'll see.
Coach, obviously, that Week 19 game has to have been one that's been circled on your calendar for quite some time, another return trip to your home city in Orlando. If that game is for the season, if that game is for one of you will get in the playoffs and one of you will not get in the playoffs, as it kind of is sort of shaping up to be, what would it mean to you to be able to knock Orlando out of the playoffs and get yourself in?
I think that it's not a personal thing. You know, there's nothing personal about it. It's more about getting in the playoffs, period, you know, and that's the ultimate goal is, you know, to win the Arena Bowl. And before you win the Arena Bowl is to get into the tournament. And you've got to find a way to get in the tournament. And it may come down to Week 19, you know, very well might happen and be a tremendous game. I think Orlando's a lot better than the record also. But, you know, we've got Arizona, Jacksonville are scheduled before that happens, and, you know, a lot's got to happen before then. So we're preparing for Arizona and playing the defending champion.
Well, it was late into the year 2000, Coach, where Canada was announced to be getting the New England Seawolves. They're going to be moving from Hartford up to Toronto, Ontario, Canada. You ended up being with the Toronto Phantoms, and as most fans do know, I was a season ticket holder for both of those years with the Phantoms. I got to see you play. For those who are listening who didn't know much about the Phantoms, and what was it like playing in Canada?
Well, first of all, I loved playing up there. The players loved it up there, and it was incredible. You know, going back a little bit before that, and in 2000, you know, after the 2000 season, I was with Orlando, and we had won the championship that year. I was a backup that year.
Yep.
I was coming off a shoulder injury from the year before. And that was the first year following 2000 season of free agency. That had not existed. And so, Toronto came calling and, guys started seeing a lot of player movement. And so I was able to sign and kind of move on to another team as a free agent and go to Toronto and just know what to expect. And we had a pretty good team that first year. We made the playoffs.
I think you were a game away from making the Arena Bowl, if I remember correctly. I think you lost to the Nashville Cats.
Yeah, I think we lost to the Nashville Cats. It might have been the first round. It's a long time ago, but it was, I think a couple things that I remember about playing up there was, number one, you know, playing both national anthems was interesting. And you're in the Canadian anthem and how long it was, I think the first time, you know, there's a pause in the Canadian anthem and, you know, we're ready to put our helmets back on and start and we had to sit back and keep going. And, the other memories are the fans were trying to wrap their heads around the game. You know, they love football and, but they go from, you know, Canadian football with the largest football field in North America to, you know, arena football, this small field. I mean, a lot of fans that would show up and they'd cheer, but they're trying to figure out, you know, the game itself. So, the Air Canada Center is unbelievable to play in. Traveling, you know, internationally, using our passports was always interesting. It was a great experience. I loved it.
What about as far as playing for the Godfrey family? What about the city, interested you? I mean, obviously with the team leaving, deciding to fold at the end of the 2002 season, I mean, is it a city that you would have loved to have stayed in if the Phantoms had been there? Were you, as a player, trying to promote other players to say, listen, Canada's not all that bad. You could actually come up here and play.
Toronto is one of the most amazing cities I've ever been to. It's just so different. It's such a metropolitan, international city. Incredibly clean. You get on the subway, there's not one, speck of ink. It's spotless on the subway. It's safe. It was just a really unique, place. The food was amazing. Rob Godfrey, the Godfrey family was amazing to me and my wife. And my wife loved it up there too. We were newlyweds when I went up there. We got married, I think, in March, and I believe turned around right after our honeymoon to go to Toronto. So, that was different, but she spent a lot of time up there with us and we loved it and loved the city. I'm looking forward to getting back to Toronto someday. And I don't know if I would have left there, if they kept having a team. But that was tough when we got that phone call when they decided not to move forward after the 2002 season.
Coach, one of the little known facts about you is that you were, well, at least officially, the last head coach of the Los Angeles Avengers. I remember interviewing you in 08 at the Arena Bowl. You had just gotten the job. It was just announced. You were all excited and all ready to go. And then it all kind of falls apart with the AFL, and the Avengers are never heard from again. You obviously resurfaced with Orlando in 2010 as that team's head coach. What was that period of time like going from the whirlwind of getting your first head coaching job to not having a job and then getting your first, I'll call it game experience, head coaching job with Orlando?
That was crazy. I think I jokingly would tell people that in that, I think, 18 months, I did 5 press conferences to be a head coach and never got fired. And it's kind of interesting story because, I was fortunate enough to get the L.A. job, as you said, Adam. And we moved our whole family from Orlando to California, and I'm from there originally. So it was really a neat situation with my family being there. And we were there 4.5 months, and they shut the league down, and I was scared. We'd turn around. We came back to Florida. I was out of work for a few months, and Jerry Cruz called me and said that the Tri-City Fever of the AFP was going to make a change at their head coaching position, and would I be interested and go to Tri-Cities? And I didn't know where it was. I looked at my wife, and she said, take it. She wanted me to get out of the house and take a job, so. I thought Tri-Cities was somewhere in the Midwest or, up near Quad Cities, like somewhere up north, Illinois. And I found out it was up in Spokane, Washington, or Tri-Cities, Washington. So went out there and did another press conference as the head coach there. They were 0-5, and that was really the best thing I ever did. I really kind of wavered on should I do it or not. I walked into a really tough situation up there and handed the keys really to the car in the office and said, here you go, it's yours. And I really had to wear a lot of different hats. And what that did was that prepared me for what was to come with the new AFL coming about. So I finished the Tri-Cities, and the Tri-Cities went through an ownership change, and so they rehired me. The new owner hired me. I did a press conference. So there was another press conference at Tri-Cities, and we were going to go to the IFL. And then Brett Bush called me and offered me the Orlando position. And then that was kind of a whirlwind 18 months and another prep conference. But it was a pleasure and an honor to come back and coach the Predators and a team I played 6 years for.
Coach, obviously, you spent that time in the AF2, and the AF2 was, of course, originally designed to be the minor league and almost the breeding ground for some of the new stars that now we're seeing in the AFL, whether it be Nick Davila, whether it be Kyle Rowley, and the list goes on and on. Do you feel like you got that same sort of experience in the AF2 just from the coaching standpoint that the players were supposed to be getting from a playing standpoint?
It was huge, yeah. I kind of, as I when I got there, I was so, you know, I was overwhelmed with, you know, I got there on Tuesday and we're going to play Saturday. So you're really overwhelmed and trying to install a plan, getting to know the coaches that were already there that I inherited in the whole situation, and then really, thrown to the wolves a little bit. But it was the best thing that ever happened as the season went on and we took those long AF2 bus trips, you know, those 12-hour bus trips. I started realizing that, you know, I think there's a bigger picture here, that this is, it's almost an internship. It's almost a paid internship for me. And so I really tried to, you know, I wore a lot of different hats, which you have to do in AF2, and learned a lot, about how to do more with less. And that helped me, I think when, because I got hired in Orlando, literally like 30 to 35 or 40 days before the season started. Before the AFL restarted in 2010, because we didn't know what Jay Gruden was going to do that year. So they hired me, you know, 40 days before camp started. I had to really scramble, put a team together, get to training camp, and field a team that would be appropriate for Orlando Predators and the history of that. So I think that really helped me in Tri-City. That's something, that's an experience I'll never forget.
Well, I would admit, Coach, you know, seeing your career both as a player and a head coach, and I know Adam has probably seen you play more times than I did when you were in Toronto, but, you know, and everything that you've gone through for the past year, I think both of us are, and all fans are, like, say, we're happy that you fully recovered from the staph infection, because, you know, once somebody becomes a player or a coach within the Arena Football Leagues, you have an extended family, and I know we saw the story about you when you were going through the rough times. But I just want to say thank you for joining us. When it comes to the Arena Football League, as I said, our extended family will always welcome you into the group. So it was great talking to you, Coach.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you guys, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Coach.
All right.
Great interview, Adam. I know you were the one who was able to set this up for us. I think it's been a while since we've actually talked to a former coach / player. It has been years, if I remember correctly, since we've had one of those. But what a great interview.
Yeah, and, you know, Coach O'Hara has found a way to take a team that, pardon the pun, was dead, turns it into a team that, in spite of the fact that, you know, Call 5-10 what it's worth. 5-10 should never be a playoff team, but, you know, give them credit.
Yep.
They've clawed back into it, and, you know, they're two wins out of three games, essentially, and maybe just one win away from getting in the playoffs. And as I've said all year and have been quoted on a number of times, you got to win, and you got to get in, and you got to win three games. And that's it.
Exactly.
Somebody is going to do it.
Exactly. Now, speaking of the voodoo, speaking of players, speaking of a quarterback, you actually came up with something during the break while listening to the interview, a very interesting stat about their current starting quarterback, Chris Dixon.
Yeah, very quirky. There is a good chance that Chris Dixon is going to end up leading both the Predators and the Voodoo in rushing this year. And, I mean, maybe it's happened before in league history. Somebody can correct me if they know it. You know, but I can't go through every single combination of teams in league history, but that may be the only time that's ever happened in hell. It may be the only time that's ever happened in professional football. Now, Mikel Benson might catch him. He needs 12 yards to catch him and 13 yards to pass him, but, I mean, he only gets the ball down by the goal line.
Exactly. And if Dixon does continue to start or play, at least.
And regardless, I mean, he's going to lead New Orleans one way or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
He's there already, so.
Exactly. So. Yeah, you know, what do you guys think about the O'Hara interview? Any questions that you would have wanted to ask him? Anything, any comments on what he actually talked about? Well, you can let us know. You can contact us through all of our social networking, sites, through Twitter, Facebook, and there's Instagram. That's all at @ArenaFan. And we will give you the email addresses, when we near the last segment of the show. Well, Adam, I will admit the fans did amazing, and we, you know, we'll give them a mulligan for last week, considering it was right near right before the long weekend for you, anyways. I'm trying to
Fourth of July.
Yeah, it was Fourth. No, I know, but it wasn't a long weekend.
A lot of people made it a really long weekend.
Oh, did they? Okay, so it's something similar to U.S. Thanksgiving, but that's an, you know. But the fans came through this week. I will admit there's one question that we're trying to get an answer on. It's sort of a two-part question, but we're going to go ahead and ask the question first. And it came from Nicholas Sarabia. Basically, his question is, whatever happened to these talks of a second network?
Well, so far, we can't put our finger on a lot and say definitively we know this is going to happen, even though I would not be surprised if we did hear something specific in a few weeks at the Arena Bowl. But we know we've heard Fox Sports 1 is interested, and probably namely because there's not a whole hell of a lot going on Fox Sports 1, and they're supposed to be debuting. I believe their debut date is August 17th.
It is the 17th. And funny thing about that.
Day before the Arena Bowl.
No. The funny thing about that is that their number one team, broadcast team for their Sports Center type of show, I don't remember what they're going to be calling it, was Canada's former TSN number one team here. They hired Canadians to do the job in the U.S.
Great. Shows you how desperate they were.
No, these guys are good. If you have a chance, Jay Onwright and Dan O'Toole are freaking hilarious. They're more than just spitting out the stats and whatnot, Adam. They're really, really funny. They know how to put on a good show and just happen to throw in a sprinkle of stats, sports interviews, and sports highlights. But it's we don't get it up here. We don't get that station. But if you guys happen to get the channel, I say take a look. I think you'll like what they're doing, even though it may be a little, you know, Canadian quirky, but whatever. Commissioner Kurz he talked about having that announcement last week for the insurance company, the insurance association joining as a partner. I think we're going to hear more of these over the next couple of weeks, and then we'll hear the big things at Arena Bowl. We're not going to hear anything, I don't think, at the main press conference. Kind of the Commissioner Kurz won't do that. I think he'll actually wait for halftime of Arena Bowl, in between, the Kiss concert and his appearance, his weekly appearance on TV. But, I'm sure we'll probably hear it then. And if we hear anything when it comes to, expansion or whatnot. I know, by the way, speaking of announcements, and we're supposed to be hearing something about the AFL Global, announcement in the next, I think it's the next couple of weeks, when it comes to their exhibition games that they're going to be playing in Hawaii and in China.
We're looking forward to covering that.
Yeah, and it's, we'll be, we'll try to get the information to you as soon as it becomes readily available to us. So, wouldn't it be weird, by the way, Adam? How would you, let's see, arenafan.com/CN. I don't think I'd ever think that I would possibly see the day, we're just talking about this, of seeing arena football written in China on arenafan.com. I can't read it.
Nice.
I can't read it, but, it would be an interesting quirk if it does get that big, but we'll see what the AFL Global throws at us. Raymond Brissett brings up a very interesting question. It has to be about the Sol and Dan Radabaugh's one you mentioned, hinted at earlier. So Radabaugh is ranked the number one QB in the league according to the league's Facebook page today, or the Philadelphia Facebook page, I don't know. What are the chances he wins MVP? It seems like no one brings up his name in the discussion.
Now, part of the reason no one's brought up his name in the discussion is the fact that he's never had the statistics of the best quarterback in the league this year, and though he is the top-rated passer, at just under 127, as I mentioned before, he's still not quite at Urban Meyer and Nick DeVila. He doesn't have the wins of those guys. He's got some brutal losses at home against Cleveland and Pittsburgh. I'm high on Dan Rodabaugh. I think he is an underrated quarterback right now. He's only a couple tenths of a percent short of completion, of leading the league in completion percentage. He's 4 percentage points ahead of Nick Davila, and that's saying something.
Yeah.
You know, he's 120 yards off the pace of the league lead, in passing yards. He's got 81 touchdowns. He's one of the four quarterbacks with at least 80 touchdowns, excuse me. But he's 15 touchdowns off of Meyer. He's 14 touchdowns off of Davila, and most importantly are the wins. You know, 10 and 5 is great. 10 and 5 is going to ultimately, you know, win the Eastern Division, obviously, and possibly be ultimately the number one seed in the American Conference. But it's not 13 and 2. It's not what's likely to be 15 and 2. You know, it's not Spokane likely finishing 13 and 5 or 14 and 4. It's just not going to be that. So I don't think he is going to win the MVP award. I think it's going to be Nick Davila. Again, but I could definitely see the argument and hear the argument. And look, I would make the attestation that perhaps he deserves it. But he's also got a lot of help on this Philadelphia team, and that's not to say that Eric Meyer doesn't.
Right.
It's not to say that Nick Davila doesn't. It's still a quarterback-centric league. But what he has that those two teams don't have is the legitimate running game. He can legitimately turn around, hand the ball to Derrick Ross, and let Derrick Ross get offense, not just points.
Right. Now, you look at the other quarterbacks that are, you know, that are doing quite well this year. You know, at this time of the year, no quarterback is over 100 touchdowns, and that should change this week. We should have at least two. Both Meyer and Davila should shoot over the century mark. What would it take for, say, Eric Meyer? And I'm just going to throw a name out there. Even though he hasn't played the entire year, a lot of people put Adrian McPherson high on the list of possibly being an MVP candidate.
Well, McPherson is the most valuable player of the league right now by definition of the, you know, the words most valuable player. Look what Tampa Bay has done without him over the course of the last several weeks. But no, AD Max stands no chance because he's missed too much time in spite of the fact that he's going to have the best touchdown interception ratio in the league this year. His numbers just don't stack up, and the bottom line is Tampa Bay is not finishing much above. They're certainly not finishing much above 500 if they even finish at 500. What would Eric Meyer have to do? I think it's a statistics game. Have more touchdowns than Nick Davila, have more yards than Nick Davila, have a better quarterback rating than Nick Davila, have a better percentage than Nick Davila, and he'll have a chance. I still think Nick Davila is going to win it because Arizona is going to win the West, is going to be the number one seed, is going to have the best record in the league, mm-hmm. and ultimately probably is going to win the Arena Bowl. I don't totally discount Meyer. I still just think it's a matter of it's Davila's to lose, and unless the league kind of wants to go off the beaten path, he is the one who is going to ultimately win the award.
Now, I'm trying to remember. What about, I think there's an MVP. It's offensive MVP. They keep changing these things up. So we have an MVP, or is it just the offensive MVP? I'm trying to remember here.
I don't know. It's this year.
I know. I have to go back and check.
Regardless, no defensive player is going to be, quote, MVP of the league this year.
No, and for the first time in probably a while, there is not going to be an Iron Man of the year.
JLS Playmaker of the, yeah.
Whatever it is, yeah. I mean.
Give the award to Uwe Whitaker and be done with it.
Yeah, exactly. So.
He's basically the only real Iron Man left in this game anymore.
Great question, though. It really gets.
Well, we'll keep addressing that.
Oh, yeah, for
obviously,
sure.
Obviously, there's a lot of football to play.
For sure. Next question comes to us from, hold on a second here, from John Benoit. Are the Predators in a good position to make the playoffs as a fourth seed? Well, actually right now they're a fifth seed, but are they in a good position to make the playoffs? So we'll leave it at
fifth
that.
Seed out of four is not a good thing.
No, it's not.
But sure, I mean, does it make a difference right now? No, it doesn't make a difference
no.
right now. The truth of the matter is all the Predators have got to do is win one of these next two games and beat New Orleans in week 19. They can win both of these next two games, and then maybe week 19 won't mean anything. If I had to guess, it's going to come down to that week 19 game, whether it be with Orlando at 6-11 and New Orleans at 5-12 or you know, 7-10 and 6-11 or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that's what it's going to come down to. So, sure, Orlando's positioned very well to do that, especially considering the fact that New Orleans has left, as Coach O'Hara alluded to, games against Arizona, Jacksonville, and at Orlando, and Orlando has left Iowa at Cleveland and New Orleans. So, obviously, you know, just blindly there, you would rather have the second of those two schedules than the first of those two schedules. Will they get in? Probably. I would say there's probably 60, maybe 70% chance that, Orlando's going to get in as the fourth seed. Then there's, of course, the question of, is it really going to earn Orlando more than one game?
Yeah, and you know what? That last game could come down. I mean, it's you have to, you know, we'll look at the different scenarios and whatnot and the different teams, but
don't totally discount the idea of Cleveland or Pittsburgh getting in at this point. Don't totally discount, because those two teams,
it could be done this week, according to the league.
Yeah, of course it could. Yeah. But if Orlando screws the pooch this week against Iowa, and I think there's a chance that it can happen, and we'll talk more about that as we get. As we get into our picks for the week. But Cleveland and Pittsburgh could both reasonably be one game back with two games to play.
That's true. I never expected a Cleveland to be, it's
3-12 and still kicking.
I know. I know. a question from Riley Pierre Wheaton. Would it be too late to advocate that the CBS Sports Network seriously consider substituting the Power Saber Cats game to a game with playoff implications? Now, the league so far has done the flexing thing, I think it's twice this past season. You and I were talking about it before, but you
air quotes, flex.
Yeah. You actually mentioned a game which would actually make a little bit more sense to go ahead and change it too. Because what you need to remember, fans, is that a lot of these games have local contracts already assigned to most of them. And the one few, you know, the few week that really doesn't have anything, A, is this week. So if there had been a change, I think they would have done it already. It's just, I don't see it occurring. Maybe they'll announce it tomorrow, but I don't think that'll be the case.
No, they're not changing the game. No. And the truth of the matter is it is a game with playoff implications, and it's a game with as much in the way of playoff implications as basically any other. You know, you look at we'll just go game by game real quick. Utah's already eliminated, so that game against Philly only has one team playing for something.
And it's on Friday.
Iowa could be eliminated by the time that game is over with against Orlando, regardless of what it does. And the truth of the matter is if New Orleans loses, this game don't mean a damn thing to Orlando, really. They're still going to have to win in Week 19 in all likelihood.
Exactly.
Spokane-Jacksonville has something for both sides. Cleveland-Chicago is basically the same game.
Yeah.
You know, so Tampa Bay-San Antonio is basically the same game, and New Orleans-Arizona is basically the same type of game. So there are playoff implications for both teams. Obviously, Pittsburgh needs to win to stay in, and San Jose is going to need to keep winning if it wants to stay in front of Spokane. For that number three seed as well.
And going over the next 2 weeks, which we had talked about, you felt that there was actually one game which would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them flexing in Week 19. I could see them doing it if Philly knows it's going to be the one seed, for example, or knows it's going to be the two seed, for example. If San Antonio already knows that it has won the division title or not won the division title,
right,
there's nothing
right.
It can do about it. If that's the case, I could see them moving that New Orleans-Orlando game to 9 o'clock and flexing that in. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to go to San Antonio one way or the other, but that's the only one I could see them trying to flip, because I don't know how receptive Brett Bushy would be to a 9 o'clock game in Orlando.
I'm also thinking, too, because something you mentioned that we haven't corrected yet on our schedule is that the KMG 6 in Orlando, Click 6 also, Click Orlando is also carrying the game. So,
yeah,
I didn't know.
It could carry that's only hearsay at this point.
Okay.
That is not official. That is something that I have heard around the rumor
mill. Oh, okay.
That KMG is going to pick up that game.
Okay.
If it means something.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I mean, so few games. I mean, they got to get everything in. I think they got to get CBS just has to get everything in order. When it comes to these games, you know, Pittsburgh, they're going to Cleveland. You know what? Kind of makes sense. You know, I really don't see them switching it. And one reason why, too, Adam, is because all they got to do from this week in Pittsburgh is drive to Cleveland. That's it. I don't see that.
No, that's not what they do, though.
No, but I think we've seen it before. Remember, one of the games in Tampa, I think it was Tampa, it was like Florida in that 1 week, in those 3 weeks after they. You know, in between the game, then the flex game, and then the game, the following week game. I think it was all Florida. I think. I have to go back and check, but I think. And who knows? Is it cost-cutting? It could be a cost-saving issue. I don't know. But, we'll see. If it's not done tomorrow, it won't be done at all. I think it's fair to say.
No, they're not flexing the game. It's not happening.
Yeah. I don't really know how. I'll just throw this one out anyway from Patrick Brooks. How far will the Predators go if they played like they have been since the win streak and are very close loss to the Sharks? You can't really go back.
Are you watching the same team I'm watching? That's my question, because if you're watching the same team that I'm watching, you're watching a team who can't play a lick of defense. Not a single lick. I don't remember the last time the Predators got, you know, more than one legitimate stop in a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I
gotta go back to those games against Pittsburgh and Cleveland.
Yeah. What is done is done. I mean, it's, you lose a game, you lost it. It's done. It's done with.
That being said, I would still like the matchup for Orlando against Jacksonville if that's what it would come down to in round one.
Mm-hmm.
And Philly is beatable. And we've seen Philly be beatable. I said in the Sentinel a couple, last week?
Yep.
That I still think Orlando can go to the Arena Bowl. I still think it's very reasonable to think that Orlando could play in this Arena Bowl this year and host this game. They're not winning it, but I could absolutely see them getting there. I said at the beginning of the year, Arizona against Orlando, and damn it, I'm going to live and die with that.
Okay. Another TV-related question from Kendrick from Melvin Moten. Despite the scheduling, the schedule disparity, should the league consider reseeding for the playoff, or is it a TV thing?
Well, I mean, there isn't a matter of reseeding because it's a matter of conference play. You would have to be crossing conferences in order to, quote, reseed, because you only have four teams that get in. So after you go through four teams, then obviously you're down to two teams. And the better-ranked team will host the lower-ranked team. I think the better question at that point is, should we even be bothering with this conference crap? And that's a different story for a different day. But I think we can both agree, and I think everyone would agree, that it's stupid and that it's time to just let the – if you're going to do eight teams, let the eight best teams in the league get in.
Yeah.
We could still very plausibly be in this situation. 3-12 teams would be eliminated, but these crap little 5-10 teams would still be right in the thick of things to get in the playoffs at this point.
That's true. I'm still
have to run down out of Chicago or San Antonio.
I'm still going by what I've been thinking. I really think the league needs to think about putting in a crossover. It can completely change and make it more. You know, the league, as I said it a few weeks ago, the league's looking to keep, you know, everybody, all of the fans into this as long as possible. This is another way to do it. This is easily another way to do it. And remember, if this is the case, this crossover team cannot win. They cannot be seeded higher than a divisional winner. They would still be a road wild card team. So even if they have a higher record, they would still play at whomever. I think it would work. You know, if we were to do the,
part of it is the logistics problem of having to fly a team from Tampa Bay to Spokane, Washington on no notice.
Yeah, especially if it does come down to the last week.
Mind you,
the way that's going now, a lot of this stuff may come down to the last week, but it's, I see what you're saying.
But there's a big difference between flying Phoenix to Spokane, you know, from Phoenix to Spokane, and flying from Orlando to Spokane.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, a couple of years ago, when Tampa Bay was playing Orlando in the conference championship game for the right to go to Spokane for the Arena Bowl,
mm-hmm.
whoever won that game was flying out of Tampa Bay, because they had the ability to switch the names on the tickets once, and they already had all the names for all the guys on Tampa Bay on the tickets. And if Orlando had won that game, had that field goal gone through the uprights at the end instead of falling just short, the league would have just changed all the ticket names, and the Predators would have had to drive from Orlando to Tampa to get on a plane to fly to Spokane.
Ouch. If we were to do a crossover right now, it would be San Antonio that would be crossing over into the American Conference.
Right, and taking the spot of New Orleans.
Right, yeah, it would be New Orleans. They've taken the spot of New Orleans. That's correct. I think it would work. I mean, even if you just experiment for a year.
At that point, you just take the best eight teams.
Yeah. Maybe you should. That might be the easiest way of doing it.
It worked in the past. I don't know why it doesn't work now.
Well, God, what are they going to do with those, you know, those each of those American Conference and National Conference trophies, Adam. Sell them on eBay?
Stick them in Jerry's garage. I don't know.
I don't know. Put them in the Hall of Fame, the Road Hall of Fame. Great questions, guys. Once again, I mean, you came through, you had your holiday off, you did fantastic, great questions. Obviously, we will let you know next week when we need to have your input. Well, Adam, you know, the league has announced, you know, the week 17 playoff picture for the Road to Arena Bowl in Orlando. We have all teams playing this week, and I think one game that I want to center on specifically before we get to the rest of the schedule is the one that's going to be happening on Saturday in Rockford. In your opinion, is this the last game for the Rush?
No. I think this league is going to ride and die with this franchise just because Jerry wants a team there. League headquarters are there. Jared's Jerry's hometown. Jerry wants a team there. I don't know whether they'll find an owner. I do think it'll be the last game in Rockford. I think they'll find some way to finagle their way back into Allstate or perhaps into – I know the Chicago Slaughter have been having problems. I haven't really read much into
that's
it.
True.
But maybe
Center.
They could go, you know, play at the Sears Center where the Slaughter play. But the Rush will find some way in some capacity to survive. And not because they deserve to survive is the wrong terminology there, but not because they've necessarily done anything to warrant being called a positive franchise in terms of profitability, mm-hmm. but just in the standpoint that I think Jerry's stubbornness is going to keep a team in the general Windy Cities area.
Okay. Well, it starts off on Friday. Utah travels to Philadelphia. Utah has already been eliminated. There is, you know, really only one, is it only one? Because Philadelphia has already clinched a playoff berth, and they are the Eastern Division champion. There is no scenario. I don't see any other scenarios here where a win or a loss would hurt them either way. But
I mean, obviously they're trying to keep up with Jacksonville.
Correct.
So you know, it may not be any decisive happening this week, but the bottom line
for
all intents and purposes, Philadelphia is a game back of Jacksonville. Yeah. I know they have the same record, but Philadelphia is going to lose the tiebreaker to the Sharks. So the best Philly could do is hope to win its last three games and hope that Jacksonville slips up at some point.
Yeah, actually, I'm wrong. If Philadelphia and Spokane both win this week, Philadelphia would become the number one seed in the American Conference based on overall record. Jacksonville.
Sure, they would hop over Jacksonville.
Jacksonville would drop to number two.
Dear league, you didn't need to publish that. Any idiot can see that.
Now, who does Coach James give Grady?
It doesn't matter. I don't think so.
No.
No, I understand that Utah hasn't been putting up that many points, but Jason Boldus still has some of the better stats that we've seen at a backup quarterback this year. Give the kid a shot. Yeah. Ain't going to matter. Philly's going to win this game by 30, but.
Boldus has been playing very well, I will admit. They've been playing very well.
The Blaze just have no pulse whatsoever at this point.
Yeah.
Flying across the country is not going to help any.
Well, also last week, too, when you lose your you lose your own funeral game last week to New Orleans. Philadelphia has a lot more to play for, obviously. So it's this game could easily be very, very ugly. On Saturday we have the rest of the slate in the league. Starts off with the CBS Sports Network Game of the Week: San Jose traveling cross country to play the Pittsburgh Power.
Be very, very careful with this game, San Jose. I do think the Sabercats are going to win this game, but I do think this is going to be a tricky, tricky type of game. We saw this a couple weeks ago. You know, San Jose beat the living crap out of Arizona, mm-hmm. went on the road the next week, and damn near got beaten by a Utah team that, had it shown any life whatsoever, would have won that game. Now San Jose is coming off the thumping of San Antonio, big game. Here we go again, on the road, flying a long way against a team that's playing for its life. Be very, very careful in this one, San Jose.
Yeah, And it's funny, even though, you know, if San Jose wins this week, if according to what they're saying here, it doesn't really matter, because if Arizona wins or Spokane loses in week 17, and it's inevitable anyways, Arizona would clinch the Western Division Championship based on holding the tiebreaker over
San Jose. Again, if you're San Jose, you're worried about what is going on in relation to Spokane, because there could be a massive difference, because I still don't see how the Rush are going to be hosting a playoff game. I don't think they're going to let them do it. Maybe they do, but I don't see it. I think, especially knowing that San Jose is playing Chicago in week 19, and we've been saying this since this game was changed from, you know, Allstate Arena to
San Jose.
To what are they calling the place now? The SAP Pavilion or whatever they're calling
SAP
it now.
SAP Center, yeah.
You know, ever since that point, we have said, don't be surprised if that ends up being where, you know, that Chicago basically is just told, you're staying there, and you're going to play this team twice. So there's a lot to play for here for San Jose, but this is a game that could be very, very tricky, especially with Philadelphia coming to town next week in a much, quote, bigger game for the Sabres.
Well, also, too, I think for San Jose, they want to make sure that I think they would end up playing Chicago or San Antonio in the first round, rather than playing their Western Division nemesis, Arizona Rattlers, which it's possible, right, as of right now.
Somebody's going to have to. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, if you're San Jose, you want to keep winning because you got to get in front of Spokane. Not just to dodge Arizona and get the easier game, but to very likely get a home game.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, not saying that the person who doesn't play Arizona is going to have an quote-unquote easy road to the next round. That's not the case. We've seen weirder things happen in the playoffs. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting. You know, once that last week of the season pops up, get ready. That's all I can say, get ready. Iowa travels to Orlando.
Why do I think Orlando is going to screw the pooch in this game? And I've been saying this for a while, that Orlando is going to find some way to lose one of these two games that it has no business losing against Iowa or Cleveland next week. You know, Iowa's a weird team. Iowa has been a weird team. Iowa will remain a weird team. You put Iowa in the American Conference, that's a 10-win team. You stick Iowa in the conference that it's in, there's just too many puzzling games.
It's weird. And the funny thing is, Iowa still is technically eligible for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen because they got to play Arizona in the last week of the season. But hell, off a bye week, what did Coach Ho do with that bye week? That's the question. Mm-hmm. Iowa scored 37 points or less in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of their last 7 games, but in the other 2 games, scored 62 and 73.
Yeah.
Go figure. And this is a bad, 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 bad Orlando defense that Iowa's playing against. I think it's very possible that Iowa is going to win this game in the jungle.
I think with the way things are going, I don't see Orlando losing this game because they know that they have something to play for. They're playing, you know, they have to try. Coach Plank has to do something in order for them to at least get one game ahead of the Voodoo. Considering this is the week to get ahead, if you think about it, because of who New Orleans is playing. I think they need to do everything in their God-given bodies to make sure that they pull out a win on this one. They haven't played each other, by the way, in 2 years, these two teams. So it's not much of a season series between these. One interesting note, Coach Plank will be facing Iowa for the first time, and Coach Hohensee has actually played Orlando 19 times.
And he's won a whole crap load of those games, including an arena ball.
He's 8-11 over. He's 8-11 all time.
That's it? Okay.
Yeah, 8-11. That's it.
It just feels like every time Chicago came up on Orlando's schedule that Orlando was losing.
Yeah. go to the next game of the week. We have, I've lost my place, Spokane, who's went ahead, they've stayed the entire week so far in the state of Florida because they have to go the travel back and whatnot for the East Coast, West Coast 2 weeks in a row, going into Jacksonville.
Oh, how interesting this game is.
Oh, yes.
Guess who has been announced as the starting quarterback for the Jacksonville Sharks this week? Mr. Kyle Rowley, whom has been all over the freaking board. The last time we saw him, he was busy beating Orlando. Can he take down another one of his former teams who essentially jettisoned him without really giving him much of a shot this year? I don't think so. I think Jacksonville is going to get his ass kicked in this game. I think Spokane has – I think there's going to be a level of complacency off the bye week for Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. I think Spokane is used to playing here now. I think it's a very smart move not to make that ridiculous flight back across the country only to come back across the country again. You know, the Shock have a really, really phenomenal offense. And though Jacksonville's defense has played well, it hasn't played so well to make up for if Kyle Rowley gets all pick happy and throws three picks like he did the last time he started for the Sharks. Bernard Morris, I don't know what this is saying.
Yeah.
But he's healthy. He's active. He's going to be the backup quarterback. Is he the permanent backup quarterback, or is he really not totally healthy? And that's what I think is going to be interesting to see, what type of a leash that Kyle Rowley has. Look, Kyle could go out and throw 9 touchdowns and no picks and win this game, but it's tough to see the way that he has played short of for that one half against Orlando. I think Spokane is going to come here and win this game and win this game convincingly against the Southern Division champs.
Yeah, no, I'm actually agreeing with you on that one. This is actually a return trip for these two teams. It's like the second game of the home and home. They played each other back in June in Spokane, and Spokane beat the living daylights out of Jacksonville 76-41. Starting quarterback out of that day for Jacksonville, by the way, happened to be Bernard Morris. Didn't finish the game because R.J. Archer ended up coming. R.J. Archer, yep, came in to basically for relief of Bernard Morris. Eric Meyer that day had a huge day. You know, we don't have to worry about the travel. The team is basically, it's practicing like normal. I really think the Shock's going to come in, and they're going to, you know, they're going to sweep this two-game Florida series. So it's
proving once again how much more of a superior conference the and specifically division, the West Division, is in comparison to everyone else in the league.
Yeah. Mentioned it before, Cleveland travels to Chicago. It's a big game for Chicago, especially being tied at 8-7, and they still do hold a tiebreaker at the moment versus the San Antonio Talons.
Yeah, I would be worried about this game if I were a let's call it what it is, a Rockford fan at this point. The Rush have really, it almost seems like they've kind of hit the end of the road here. You know, they beat Tampa Bay not really in a convincing game with the Storm using their third quarterback. You know, the loss to San Antonio at home, the loss to Philadelphia in god-awful fashion.
Was it ever.
And, you know, with games against Arizona and San Jose coming up on the road in back-to-back games, I wonder whether Coach McMillan, for as great of a job as he has done and did, especially through the middle of this season, has he run out of gas? Is this the end of the road for the Rush this season? You know, Cleveland came up with a big, big win last week. You know, there aren't many of them. But what I will say about Cleveland is this team has played hard every week in spite of the fact that it has 12 losses. I like Cleveland in this game in a somewhat modest upset to finish a very bad home schedule for the Rush, who are only 2-5 when playing at home, regardless of where home has been this season.
Yeah, it's even though that the Cleveland beat Chicago only by 3 points back in May. Games at the BMO Center, they're 1-1 at the BMO Harris Bank Center. I don't know how this will be for their final home game. You look what happened last week. I will admit, I did not expect Cleveland to win the game last week in any way, shape, or form. I was totally, totally off on that one. I know it basically has cost me, I think it's cost me the Pick'em Championship this year, but, Chicago, they have to do something. I think if they are able to at least play a little bit better, they might be able to win this one, but, as both you and I know, they have to do something, especially with their upcoming schedule. This one game, if they're able to win this game, San Antonio happens to lose to Tampa Bay. They're one up with two to go.
Essentially two up with two to go,
yeah,
at that point.
Exactly. So the Rush need this win, point blank to me. Speaking of Tampa Bay and San Antonio, Tampa Bay travels to San Antonio.
What are the Storm doing right now? I'm very curious as to what Tampa Bay is trying to accomplish, because AD Mac, from everything that I've heard, looks and seems relatively healthy. I guess he's not totally 100%, and I understand why chance it. The Storm, barring a collapse of epic proportions, will be the third seed in the American Conference one way or the other. So I guess there's not any real urgency to it.
Yeah, they can clinch that this weekend with some help.
You know, the difference in this one is this is a game that I know that locker room wants in a bad way, because San Antonio came to Tampa Bay and embarrassed the Storm in a game that they should have absolutely dominated. It was a game that Nick Hill had started.
Nick Hill's first test, huh? First start.
After just a couple days with the team. So this is a game the Storm want. Does that mean AD Mack plays? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. I would lean towards no, he's not going to play. But I also say last week Tampa Bay should have won that game against Spokane. The wheels kind of fell off there at the end, and I'm still a little bitter about that, by the way. But it was a game that the Storm showed a lot of heart and should have won.
Yes.
And I think this is a game that Tampa Bay is going to win. And I really kind of I go back to a few years ago. Tampa Bay played against Tulsa, ironically, same organization, different city, on the road in the first game, early in the season, and got beaten that game. And I remember being told by somebody in the Tampa organization that this was the game that the Storm wanted again. And they played each other in the first round of the playoffs again in Spokane, and the Storm just obliterated the Talons in that game. It was just a game that was never, ever, ever close. And, you know, Tampa Bay went on to play in the Arena Bowl that year.
Right,
I'm not saying Tampa Bay's going to go on to play in the Arena Bowl this year, but I do think this has got the same type of feel and mentality to it, and I do think the Storm are going to walk away with what will feel like a relatively comfortable and much needed victory to stop a four-game slide against San Antonio.
Yeah, I think they need this too. And as I said, they're 5-2. They're 5-2 away from Tampa Bay Times Forum, so it's not out of the realm. I really
including
think
having one in Spokane. Including having won a game in freaking Spokane of all places.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this will be a makeup. If they were able to win this game, remember, they were beaten badly back in April, 52-36. Badly. They've never beaten San Antonio at home in the two times that they've met. This is San Antonio franchise. Okay. Not doesn't include Tulsa. So, yeah, I've already said, you know, we've had some talk from some Talons fans that, oh, this is a given game that San Antonio is going to win. I have said completely, no way. Tampa Bay, I think, needs this win a heck of a lot more for other reasons. I can understand that San Antonio is tied for the lead right now, but Tampa Bay, I really think, needs this win a lot more. I really do. And I think they're going to win this game. I don't think it matters who's going to start. I don't think it matters who's going to start for Tampa Bay. I like to see AD Mack back under center. I think he would need the reps, but they've been, you know, we'll see what happens on Saturday. But I'm looking forward to this game. The last game on the schedule is one that we've been referring to. It's Coach O'Hara was mentioned. We were talking about him about New Orleans. Won two in a row on the road. Finishes the West Coast string, unfortunately, by, well, playing Arizona.
Yeah. Sorry, Coach. This one's not going to be. This will be the oh, yeah, we're still really not anywhere near as good as these other guys out there reality check for the Voodoo. Because Arizona is it was clinical last week. The last touchdown was probably a little unnecessary, and sure, there was a touchdown off the bar. But, I mean, damn, short of the drive that Nick Davila kind of got a little roughed up and ended up throwing a pick on that drive, damn, he was good for the rest of that game. And Arizona is just tearing teams apart right now. I don't think there's going to be any level of complacency for Arizona, knowing that basically everything is wrapped up at this point. I don't think there's going to be any degree of not wanting to play full bore really for the rest of the season. Maybe, you know, Nick Davila would come out of a game a little bit earlier than he's been coming out, in the event that a game starts to get a little ugly. But I don't see this being even within three scores.
Yeah, no, I same thing. If you want to watch the game instead of watching it on AFL Live, it is going to be on Cox7.com. Still, to the day, we'll say it every week if we have to. Best online streaming of arena football, bar none. Bar none. It doesn't matter. I don't care what teams are playing. It's on demand. You can go back and watch the game. Bar none. These guys are top notch. Yeah. So, we're getting closer, Adam. We're getting closer to the infamous second season. It's getting interesting. Gotta, you know, we'll see what happens with Chicago and San Antonio, et cetera, et cetera. But, it should be very interesting. But before we go, you have any parting words, sir?
Tampa Bay Rays just walked off in the 14th inning. So, 7 straight wins for them, 12 games over 500 now. Go Rays.
Came a long way. If I remember, a couple weeks back after the Toronto Blue Jays had their 11-game streak, they were ahead of the Rays, I think, by half a game.
Yep, they had them for a couple days.
Exactly. Total flip-flop. You know, Jays have been, I think, under 500 or near 500 since that point, and the Rays have just totally exploded. So it's, what can I say? It's, yeah. So I hope everybody enjoys the games this week. And obviously, if you want to contact Adam myself, you know how to do so. Tim.Capper at ArenaFan.com and Adam.Margwitz at ArenaFan.com. So for everybody here at the Arena, at the AFL Tonight family, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.